Pier 1 Theater and KBBI AM 890 present a radio theater event, The Fred Cook Interview by Nancy Lord. Dr. Frederick Cook, the famous or infamous early 20th century Arctic explorer, returns for a present-day interview about how unfairly his contemporaries treated him. This one-act play by Homer writer Nancy Lord ponders the problem of telling truth from non-truth in Cook's age and hours. The part of the interviewer is played by Mara Jones. The part of Dr. Frederick Cook is played by Mike Tupper. Please note that the character of Dr. Frederick Cook is taken out of history, and some of the language he uses to describe Indigenous people is considered offensive today. Support for this production comes from the Homer Bookstore, located at 332 East Pioneer Avenue in Homer, connecting the community with stories and voices on the page and on the stage for over 40 years. Additional support comes from the South Peninsula Hospital, improving community health with COVID-19 testing 7 days a week and COVID-19 vaccinations by appointment, free at the COVID clinic on Bartlett Street. Info at sphosp.org or 235-0235.
Welcome back. In our new segment, Know Your History, we're proud tonight to have in our studio a man who made some of that history, Dr. Frederick Cook. Dr. Cook, we thank you for joining us. Before we begin, let me just remind viewers of your significance and why we're so happy to be able to bring you to us live from the early part of our last century. You were, or are, a well-known American explorer, as well as a medical doctor, with multiple achievements. For one, you served on an Arctic expedition with Robert Peary back in 1891 and 1892. Then you made your own attempt at reaching the North Pole in 1908 with two Inuit companions. We look forward tonight to sharing some history with you and discussing how knowledge of the past might inform the present.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm pleased to share my experience with whoever's there on the other side of those cameras.
I'll get right to the point. We seem to be in a time here in the 21st century when everyone has a story, an individual reality, we might say, and it's become very hard to ascertain the truth of things. The photos and videos can be doctored, and for a variety of reasons, people put their own spin on events. Simple things, even, like the size of a crowd, or who's responsible for an accomplishment, or maybe a failure, like an economic collapse or a trade war, or response to a pandemic.
Doctored. I am a doctor, actually, a surgeon, and well-versed in the prevention of scurvy.
Yes, you've had some experience with this subject of truth, rather famously, more than a century ago, and we thought that hearing from you might bring a new understanding both to what happened all those years ago and to our current situation. So let's begin.
Please.
Could you tell us a bit about your 1908 North Pole expedition?
Others had attempted, but I was the first man to attain the North Pole walking over the ice from Greenland. It was a tremendous achievement.
I find it nearly unimaginable that you and your companions were in that incredibly hostile environment for 14 long months. I understand that your navigational records were lost, and so you've never been given clear credit for reaching the pole. You were challenged by Robert Peary, who made his own expedition the following year, and whose claim has also never been firmly established. Did I get that right?
Yes, essentially. I would add that Mr. Peary is a scoundrel, and his efforts to destroy my reputation did a great deal of harm to me personally. I had to leave my instruments and records behind to be brought later by ship. But Mr. Peary would not allow them aboard his ship, and they were never seen from again.
Why don't you tell me, in your own words, what happened in 1908? I know you've written a whole book about this, My Attainment of the Pole, which is still available in reprint editions, and I have to say it is a fascinating read, but we have limited time between commercial breaks. Can you give us a wiki summary of what you did that year?
A summary, certainly. My team started from Inuitok in Greenland on February 19th, 1908, and headed north. 500 miles from the pole, as planned, members of the supply team turned back, and I began the dash with my two Eskimo companions and a number of dogs. That was on March 18th. I reached the North Pole as precisely as it could be figured with my instruments, the very best instruments, on April 21st. We nearly died of starvation on the return. It was a phenomenal feat conquering the pole, and I have never gotten the credit that I fully deserve. In fact, no one in history has ever been treated as badly as I have. Mr. Peary.
Now, Robert Peary was a colleague and a competitor. If he could be here with us, I believe he would tell us another story.
That man malevolently assailed my character. He is guilty of perjury and forged charges. The press lined up with his dishonest movement by printing bribed, faked, and forged news items deliberately manufactured by my enemies. It was a widespread and relentless persecution from all of them. They attempted to steal the justly deserved honors of my achievement.
Fake news. Yes, that is perhaps not an invention of our own times. I gather that you were not a friend of journalism in your time.
I wrote in my book, and everyone should read it, that one of the remarkable things about modern journalism is that by persistent repetition, it can create, as a fact in the public mind, a thing which is purely immaterial or untrue. That is what happened to me. Led by Mr. Peary, there was a great clamoring after proof, absolute proof that I had indeed reached the pole. Every scientist knows that figures are inadequate, and so I did not produce, at the time, such vague and obscure proofs as existed.
Let me share a photo here, taken, I believe, by you during your North Pole expedition. The quality isn't great, given camera technology at the time, but we can see that you've planted an American flag in the roof of an igloo, and two men stand on either side. Tell me what's happening here.
That is a very large photograph. This is my photo that Mr. Peary's friends seized upon as evidence that I was not, in fact, at the exact pole. The truth is that when it was printed in newspapers, the lighting was so flat that the newspaper people painted on a shadow. And then Mr. Peary's friends, with their calculations, said that the shadow showed that the photo was taken from 500 miles away.
I love the title you gave to this photo in the book. At the pole, we were the only pulsating creatures in a dead world of ice.
Thank you. I have the best words.
Let me show another photo here. Here are the two Inuit. I believe their names are Awala and Atukashuk. Tell me about them.
I had carefully watched all my party to that point, and I selected these two as best fitted to be my sole companions in the long run of destiny. I believe they were each about 20 years old, and they were expert Eskimos.
You continued with sledges pulled by dogs and with supplies for 80 days, I believe. The temperatures in March and April must have been brutal. Can you describe the clothing? I assume you dressed in the Inuit way, the same as your companions.
Yes, we had the warmest clothing prepared for us in Noatak. We had coats of blue fox and sealskin, birdskin shirts, woolen shirts, bearskin pants, sealskin boots, and hareskin stockings. We wore bands of foxtails around our waists and knees. We had, of course, multiple pairs of sealskin mittens and fur mittens. On the march, we sometimes grew quite warm.
I realize we're in a different age now, but I'm curious about your relationship to the two men you chose to accompany you. Did you not say in your book that they worked without pay? And did you call them, quote, boreal pygmies with golden skins, muscles of steel, and hearts as finely human as those of the highest order of man?
I give them every credit. I could not have made the conquest without them. They were happy to receive a gun and a knife each.
The critics, again, said that these two men later testified that the party on the ice was out of sight of land for only a couple of days. What do you say to that?
It is true that I encouraged the delusions of my Eskimos that the mirages and low-lying clouds we saw each day were signs of land. With this innocent deception, I prevented the panic that seizes every Arctic savage when he finds himself on the ice, out of sight of land. I explained all of this in my book.
Yes, I recall that. Savage, of course, is not a word we use anymore to refer to indigenous peoples. We apologize to viewers if they're offended by the historical use. Dr. Cook, there is also the matter of the maps the men drew later on. The routes they drew were found to be almost identical to that in a novel by Jules Verne. Can you comment on that?
Mr. Peary knows as well as I do that an Eskimo on the ice out of sight of land has no sense of location. Those drawings are useless.
The Jules Verne similarity was just a coincidence.
I cannot say what was in the mind of Mr. Verne. I never met him.
And when you took your report to the University of Copenhagen for their review, what was their verdict?
At the time, I did not submit my original records. I didn't send them my journal with my daily notes because I feared it would be lost or stolen. Those self-appointed experts decided that my tremendous success was not proven. That is, as you know, very different from being disproved. Although my critics and the newspapers lied about that. I resent those kitchen explorers who know nothing of the hardships I've endured. For a year, I barely survived starvation. But I have tremendous physical fortitude and endurance. I am the strongest of men.
I think we would certainly agree that when a claim is not absolutely proven, that's not the same as it being disproven. It just means the evidence isn't compelling enough. For example, if a woman says she was raped, but no evidence was gathered at the time, she could very well be telling the truth, but the accused man walks away, because sufficient evidence is from the collection of DNA or enough collaboration from witnesses is lacking.
I wouldn't know about that. What people forget is that when I returned to civilization, I was greeted with mad cheers and hooting whistles, with bursting guns and blaring bands. I was led through streets filled with applauding men and singing children and arched with triumphal flowers. I wrote all about this in my book, in those beautiful words I've memorized. People said that no one had ever received such an ovation. I attended dinners and receptions more than 260 days. Everyone loved me. Then came Mr. Peary's vicious attack. I am the most shamefully abused man in the history of exploration, maybe of all history, throughout the entire world. Lies were printed about me.
Of course, in your day, there was no GPS system. The best we could have were your notes and calculations. Here's another photograph from your book. It shows your notes from April 21st, the day you say you reached the pole. At the top of it, it looks like you've recorded the date and a number of readings, including a temperature of negative 37.7 degrees Fahrenheit. That is cold. Then there are a lot of numbers. Can you explain how you got the numbers and what they mean?
Certainly. These are readings from my instruments, including the very best surveyor sextant, very expensive, from France. Simply, the readings I took for 24 hours show that we were at a spot where the sun circled the heavens in a line parallel to the horizon. In other words, I stood where the only direction was south.
Of course, this is all part of history now, and as you must know, you did not come out on top. But I gather that you're still convinced that your version of reality is the true one.
My victory was honestly won.
Just to bring us forward in time now, I think viewers understand that we currently live in what's being called a post-fact culture, when opinion can substitute for fact, and when anyone is able to create his or her sense of reality and have it accepted by a core constituency. We no longer have a common understanding of what may or may not be true. For a somewhat parallel example to yours, there are still people who argue that man has never stood on the moon.
Of course no man has ever stood on the moon. That's preposterous.
Such people say that the photos from moon landings were faked, and they offer as evidence that the flag sticking out straight in zero gravity could have had a wire support. These people find others who agree with them through social media, and the world for those people becomes very insular, with like minds all embracing the same ideas, even when they have no grounding in the world you or I may live in. Then, of course, currently we face all sorts of conspiracy theories surrounding contested elections and the very intentional spread of false narratives meant to undermine democracy.
I don't know why anyone would make up a story about standing on the moon. Who would believe that?
What I'm getting at here is that maybe a dispute about who got to a geographical location first has a kind of innocence to it. And of course, now that the Arctic ice is disappearing, we have much larger issues to worry about regarding the far north, including global competition for its resources.
The Arctic ice is disappearing?
What seems ironic is that in your day, it was much more difficult to document things, so that understandably there could be disputes about facts, while today there's a camera on every street corner, as well as flashing through the sky on satellites. We can look down right now on the North Pole and see what's happening there. Teams of adventurers continue to sit out for the pole, to set various records or to conduct science. Our modern explorers mark every step with GPS and can call home every night. And so realistically, we can track that kind of truth, as we can measure and track the decline of sea ice and glaciers. Yet some people will still deny what the evidence shows. They will believe what they want to believe, regardless of proven fact. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about what we might take away from your experience, to spin out to our time and perhaps the future, about how to bring people around to common understandings. Truths, if you will.
I think a man of known integrity should be believed.
So let me show you one more photo and ask you to comment. In addition to your claim to have been the first to reach the North Pole, you also claim to have been the first to climb Alaska's Mount McKinley, now known as Mount Denali. What are we looking at here?
This is the summit photo.
This was in 1906, 2 years before your Arctic quest.
Conquest.
You may know that, in addition to testimony at the time that you didn't actually reach the top of the mountain, more recent mountaineers and geographers have located this exact spot in the photograph. Today it's known as Fake Peak.
This is the work of the Peary Cabal. They could not leave me alone.
I'm not trying to do a gotcha here. I'm just wondering if you still stick to your story of first ascent. I'm genuinely interested in this debate.
There is a simple explanation. Two members of my expedition, who did not share in its success, were disgruntled. They had turned back and told everyone the mountain could not be climbed. A packer, who did complete the climb and had bragged to everyone about it, was later bribed by Mr. Peary to sign an affidavit denying the ascent. The fact that the mountain was soon climbed by many people shows that it certainly was not impossible to do so. I was only the first to stand on the summit.
You certainly had your supporters. Here's what Mr. Belmore Brown, who had been part of your expedition and doubted that you'd gotten anywhere near McKinley's summit, had to say about them. Quote, "Men who had never seen an ice axe or a sled dog wrote us reams of warped exploring details and accused us of untold crimes because we had dared to question Cook's honesty." Any comment?
Disgruntled climbers, they couldn't keep up.
At the end of your book, you go to extraordinary lengths to list all the transgressions you accuse Mr. Peary of, which include him whipping up the McKinley controversy. You literally ask the Secretary of the Navy to conduct an investigation of Peary. You accused Peary of multiple transgressions, including being so mean to other explorers that at least two of them committed suicide, stealing and selling a treasured meteor belonging to indigenous people, denying medical care to his own indigenous helpers, and kidnapping 7 or 8 indigenous people and bringing them to New York, where they were kept in miserable conditions and all but one died. You wrote that he even fathered children, that he left to starve and freeze in the North. The complete list of accusations is very long. Did any investigation follow?
It helped me get over my shock about the way I was dishonored to record those. There is more, much more, that has never been written. To write it would even more expose the ruthlessness and cruelty of the man. But I prefer the charity of silence.
Silence? Really? I gather that there was never a formal investigation of your charges.
Mr. Peary had very powerful friends, tremendously powerful and corrupt.
Just one more thing, then, before we go. I think it's a matter of record that in your later life, you got involved in some unscrupulous activity with oil companies in Texas. You were convicted of 14 counts of fraud, mostly having to do with paying dividends to investors from stock sales instead of profits, and you served 8 years in prison. Am I right about that?
I was pardoned by the great President Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1940.
Dr. Cook, I cannot thank you enough for appearing with us today. We wish you very well in your afterlife.
You have been listening to The Fred Cook Interview, a radio play written by Nancy Lord, directed by Jennifer Norton, with the voice talents of Mara Jones and Mike Tupper, and sound engineering by Josh Krohn. Support for this production comes from the Homer Bookstore, located at 332 East Pioneer Avenue in Homer, connecting the community with stories and voices on the page and on the stage for over 40 years. Additional support comes from South Peninsula Hospital, improving community health with COVID-19 testing 7 days a week and COVID-19 vaccinations by appointment, free at the COVID clinic on Bartlett Street. Info at sphosp.org or 235-0235. Pier 1 Theater is made possible by grants from the City of Homer, the Alaska State Council on the Arts, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Rasmussen Foundation, the Homer Foundation, and by contributions from community members like you.